Welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha, a podcast shared by David Roylance. This podcast is dedicated to guiding you to completely eliminate the discontent mind and the suffering it causes by attaining enlightenment. Learn and practice the teachings of Gautama Buddha that will guide you to fully attain a peaceful, calm, serene, and content mind with joy. To support this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha or visit buddhadailywisdom.com, where you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online learning resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Now, here's our teacher to share more.
Sawadee Kap, hello and welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha. Today is our group learning program, and we're in part two of a four-part series where I'm teaching students breathing mindfulness meditation. Over the course of this group learning program, there's various tools and techniques that you're going to be able to learn that will help move your mind to the peaceful, calm, serene, and content mind with joy that is described as enlightenment and taught by the Buddha. This four-part series on Wednesdays is here to be able to help you to learn meditation and then build up your practice slowly but surely. Last week, I taught students how to actually meditate using breathing mindfulness meditation. And in each one of our classes, we've been meditating together. And we're going to be doing that here in a moment in this class as well. This will help you to build up your practice by coming to class each week on Sundays and on Wednesdays to learn meditation, develop your meditation practice, and learn all the other teachings that the Buddha shares in order to help you move the mind to enlightenment. And then as part of today's class, what I'm going to do is just kind of give you a little bit of an introduction, kind of a little bit of background, going a little bit deeper than what I did last week with the teachings. Of course, last week we dove into it really deep, but now we're going to talk specifically about one aspect of meditation. And then I'm going to open up to any and all questions that you guys have. First, we're going to do meditation. Then I'm going to kind of give you guys a little bit of background and kind of targeting one particular area of meditation and kind of talking about that. And then I'll open up to any and all questions. This is a great time on Wednesdays to ask any questions that you have related to the program, related to your reading, related to your meditation practice, anything that you're challenged with in your day-to-day life. I'll be able to help you with all of that. So you'll be able to ask questions whether you're in Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom by putting that into the comment section. Or if you're in Zoom, you can electronically raise your hand and ask any and all questions that you like. And asking questions is part of the path to enlightenment, gaining clarity on the teachings, because you wouldn't be able to just read a book or take a class and be able to get to enlightenment. You're going to need clarification and gaining insight from the teacher about how the teachings work or how you should implement them into your life or any kind of daily struggles or difficulties that you're having. So I'd like to welcome all of you, whether you're joining for the first time or you've been joining regularly, and at the same time invite you to join for meditation. As you guys might remember, I'm going to start off the meditation with some chanting. This will just kind of ease the mind into meditation, and I'm going to be teaching this at later time in our program. And then after the chanting, I'm going to come in with some guidance to be able to guide students in meditation. Then there'll be a period of time where it'll just be quiet. We'll just be meditating together. And then we'll come out of the meditation with some more chanting. Remember, this chanting isn't a rite or ritual or a ceremony or worship. It's not prayer or anything like that. There's nothing mystical or magical about it whatsoever. It's really just to help ease the mind into meditation while cultivating certain qualities of mind. But I'm going to talk about all the benefits of chanting at another time. So if you'd like to either take a position sitting on the floor or sitting in a chair, these are common positions that somebody might take in order to meditate. There's also the standing and lying positions as well, which you're more than welcome to use. And there's even a walking position, which I teach in the various courses and retreats that I share. So make yourself comfortable with the lower body and the hands and arms. If you're in the seated position, you'd like the upper body to be erect. This keeps the mind attentive and alert during the meditation.
Putang makewanang apiwate yami Sawakato makewata damu Namang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sanghang Namami. Namarasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Arahasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Arahasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Iti bhisso Bhagava Arahang Sammasambuddho. Vichacharanang sammuno sakato rokavito anutero purisa dhammasati satatava manusanam. Bhutto Bhagavate.
Okay, with the lower body and the hands and arms comfortable, and the upper body erect, just close the eyes and start breathing in through the nose and out through the nose. Here you're just looking to establish the breath, a nice, natural, steady, consistent breath. Not forced or controlled, just a gradual inhale through the nose, experiencing the full breath. And then when you're ready, exhale out through the nose, breathing in and out. Breathing in and out. Your breath may not match up with the guidance that I'm providing, and that's okay. This is your practice. I'm just here for guidance. You can use this voice as a reminder that whenever you get to the next inhale, breathing gradually through the nose, developing a nice, natural, steady, consistent breath. And then, whenever you're ready, exhale out through the nose. Breathing in and out. Breathing in and out. With the breath well established, start fixating the mind on the breath. either the sound of the breath coming into the nose or the sensation of air moving over the skin into the nose. The breath is the present moment. Fixate the mind on the breath, the present moment. Breathing in. And out. Breathing in. And out. With the mind fixated on the breath, whenever you notice that it moves off the breath, cut that off, let it go, and come back to the breath, the present moment. No need to observe the thought, label it, judge it, analyze it, or even try to figure out where it's coming from. Whenever you notice that the mind is moved off the breath, cut that off, let it go, and come back to the breath, the present moment. Breathing in. And out. Breathing in. And out. I'm going to be quiet now and let you do this work of focusing on the breath, cutting off and letting go anytime the mind moves off the breath. You have nowhere to go. There's nothing to do. No one needs you right now. This is your time to focus on the breath. Breathing in and out.
อรหังสัมมาสัมพุทโธภะคะวะพุทธังภะคะวันทังอภิวาเตมิสวัสดิ์ข้าตุภะคะวะตาธัมโมดามังนามาสามิสุปฏิปันโนภะคะวะโตสาวกสังโฆสังฆังนามามิณัปโมรัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนัปโมรัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนัปโมรัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะอิติปิโสมะคะวะอะระหังสัมมาสัมพุทโธวิจจารณังสัมมโนสคาโตโรกาวิโตอนุเตโรปุริสาดามาสติสัตตาวามานุสนังปุตโตภะคะวะติ
If you guys would like to slowly make your way out of meditation. What I'm doing over the course of multiple classes is I'm gradually expanding this meditation slowly but surely to give you guys a chance to build up your meditation practice. Perhaps this is what you're choosing to do on your own too in your own practice. Because if you remember from last week, one of the things that I mentioned is that what you would ultimately like to do is build up to a meditation practice where you're meditating two or three times a day for 30 minutes or more. And this oftentimes takes quite a while for a student to build up to that consistency. It can take 6 months, a year, even 2 years to gradually build up to that. So as you're gradually building up your practice, I'm going to be helping you here in class by gradually expanding the meditation a little by little by little by little, each individual meditation on Wednesdays. On Sundays, I need to kind of stick to a certain amount of time because I'm going to be teaching a lot of content on Sundays, but on Wednesdays, I can gradually expand those. In terms of your meditation practice, if what you're noticing this early on in your practice that you're being bombarded with thoughts, this is completely normal. Or you might have noticed that you had a thought and you indulged in that thought for a period of time. And then as you followed it, you kind of realized like, oh yeah, that's right, I'm meditating. And then you decided to bring your mind back to the breath after maybe kind of indulging in that thought for 2, 3, 4 minutes. This is very common when you're first starting out to either get bombarded with thoughts or to indulge in a thought and not realize that you needed to cut that off and let it go until you're down the road. If this is happening, you're not bad at meditation. You haven't done anything wrong. It's unwise to judge yourself or judge the meditation as good or bad. Every meditation is actually a beneficial meditation. But this is very common when somebody's first getting started in their meditation practice. It's important to remember that the goal of this meditation isn't to eliminate your thoughts. Sometimes people think that's the case based on the guidance. Your goal isn't to eliminate your thoughts. As long as you're alive, you're going to have thoughts. The difference is that in the unenlightened state, you can have that bombardment of thoughts, or you can indulge in a thought for a period of time before you realize you need to bring it back. But the difference is that as you're making your way to enlightenment and the mind's actually enlightened, you'll ultimately get to a point where you can notice that there has been a thought sooner and sooner, and you can more and more easily cut it off and let it go. You're going to have these periods between your thoughts where there's this peacefulness and stillness. Some of you might be experiencing that now. You might be getting a little glimpse for like 2 or 3 seconds of this stillness or something that's in between the thoughts. Well, by the time you get to enlightenment, you'll have elongated periods of time like this where the mind is just still and quieted, and you'll be able to rest comfortably and at ease because there'll be peacefulness and calmness, and there'll also be joy in the mind showing up more and more. But as you get going with meditation for many months and maybe even years, you might experience a bombardment of thoughts or indulging in a thought. But more and more, you would like to readily notice that there is a thought and then cut it off and let it go. And this is what you're doing in meditation. We're training in meditation to cut off any and all thoughts that are coming up because you're trying to train the mind to let go. You're trying to train the mind to develop mindfulness or awareness of mind so you can be aware that there is a thought. You're training your mind to have concentration or focus or singleness of mind by focusing on the breath. And then you're training your mind to easily let go, let go, let go. So if 20, 30, 50 times during your meditation, you needed to let go, let go, let go, let go, let go. This is very healthy for the mind because with that craving, desire, attachment, because the mind is craving permanence, the mind's not going to want to let go. So you're training the mind in meditation to let go, let go, let go, let go. So in meditation, you're training your mind to cut off any and all thoughts that are coming up. And you're also building that mindfulness and awareness of mind or that concentration as well. But then in daily life, what you would like to do is only cut off your unwholesome thoughts. You're going to learn more and more the Eightfold Path and the Five Precepts and all the other teachings of the Buddha to be able to discern or know with wisdom what is wholesome and what is unwholesome and what needs to be cut off. For right now, understand that anytime there's a discontent feeling like anger, sadness, frustration, irritation, annoyance, guilt, shame, fear, stress, anxiety, loneliness, boredom, shyness, resentment, jealousy, even the slightest displeasure, work on cutting that off and cutting that off. And it takes time for the mind to be able to do that. You're not going to be able to do that easily because you haven't accumulated enough benefits in your meditation yet. So you can try to cut it off in daily life internally. The more you accumulate the benefits of meditation over multiple months, you'll be able to more readily cut those off and let them go. But you can also redirect the mind. So for example, say you're sitting in front of the TV and the news comes on and you notice this frustration and agitation building up, or even just starting to kind of peak or come to just notice it just a little bit in your mind with mindfulness. Well, rather than just sit there and dwell in that, it's wise to try to cut that off and let it go internally. But if you can't, just get up and leave. Turn off the TV and get up and leave. Redirect the mind. That's training the mind to cut it off and let it go. Go for a walk. Go for a bike ride. Go do something else. Don't allow the mind to sit there and dwell in that discontentedness, in that conditioned feeling. You're going to learn about the Eightfold Path and about how the Buddha describes this as you learn over each Sunday. I'm going to teach it to you. It's part of the Eightfold Path, but I'm kind of giving you a little bit of a shorthand here and showing you how it really connects to the meditation. That in meditation, you're training in one way, to cut off anything and everything that comes up, because you're just trying to train the mind to be able to easily let go and build that mindfulness and concentration. But in daily life, you're only cutting off the unwholesome thoughts. So if you have a feeling that is a conditioned feeling, you would like to cut that off and let it go. Or say you want to punch your coworker in the face, or you want to yell at your kids, or you want to, you know, yell at your husband or your wife, or, you know, you want to call up your mom and give her a piece of your mind, or your brother or your sister. Cut that off, let it go. It's only going to produce unwholesome results for you. So you would like to cut off just the unwholesome and unwise things. And you're going to learn more and more about what is unwholesome and what is unwise. In this aspect is very much like a professional athlete. If you know any professional athletes or you've been around this, they have a certain sport, but then they train in the gym completely different than what their sport is. So say I was a professional pole vaulter. I might go into the gym and do weight training, cardiovascular training, agility training, which looks very different than what I'm doing in my sport as pole vaulting. So I train and exercise the body in the gym in one way, but then I use the body in doing the actual sport and executing the sport in a completely different way. And the same thing is true when you're training the mind. Meditation is like exercising the mind, that you're making it stronger and stronger, getting it more disciplined and more controlled. So you're training it in one way, but then in daily life, you're executing in a different way. And the mind is just like a muscle. Like if you have a muscle that you haven't been lifting weight with, over time, that muscle will get weaker and weaker. And it's not going to be available for you when you need to move furniture or you need to pick up some groceries or something like that. And the mind is the same way, that if you're not exercising your mind, you're not purifying your mind, you're not going to have discipline and control of your mind in daily life. And this is why right now, even as you're starting to learn these teachings and starting to maybe understand them a little bit, you're not going to be able to execute them perfectly. You're not going to be able to practice them perfectly because your mind hasn't been exercised enough. It hasn't built up enough of the wholesome qualities that in daily life, when you see your husband or wife or children or mom or dad or brother, sisters, boss, coworkers do something that you disagree with, yeah, you're probably going to get angry and frustrated and irritated. You can't control your mind right now because you haven't accumulated enough benefits to be able to now practice the teachings exactly the way they need to be in daily life. So that's what you're gradually building up to by building up your meditation practice and building up your wisdom. You're gradually building up to the point where you can practice in day-to-day life and you don't get angry, you don't get frustrated. But that's going to take quite a while for you to build up to that. So you're gradually building this practice up, exercising the mind little by little by little, getting more discipline and more control. So what I'm going to do for the rest of today's class is just open up to any and all questions that you guys have. You can ask questions in Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom by putting those into the comment section. Or in Zoom, you can electronically raise your hand and ask in any and all questions that you like. Essentially, a teacher is here to provide you guidance like a tour guide, but it's up for the students to decide that they need clarification on any particular aspect of their practice. So if you're having certain challenges in meditation, you can ask those kinds of questions. If you're having challenges from the reading that you're doing or some of the classes that you've been in and you're having challenges understanding something and you would like to get some clarity and gain some clarity, or say you're having a certain struggle or you're having a certain difficulty in life and you'd like to know how to apply a certain teaching of the Buddha. Or maybe there's something that I talked about in previous classes and you've had some time to reflect on that and think about it and you'd like to kind of share something that you've been thinking about and see how that fits in with the teachings. Or maybe you would like to just kind of gain some clarity on some things that you've been thinking about since I already have introduced you to a few of the teachings so far. So any and all questions that you would like to ask, I'm open to, you know, sharing the answers with you. I'm making myself available to any of you guys who would like to ask questions. So I see Miriam has a question in Zoom. If you'd like to unmute yourself, Miriam, you're welcome to do that. We'll be able to hear you.
Hello. Good evening. It's morning here. I have a question about, I don't know what to do. I'm going to France to visit my family in a couple of weeks. And I was really wanted to visit my sister-in-law, which I have a very good connection, and we both helped my brother to die like 12 years ago, and it really took us like very close. We're like amazing. But for the past few years, every time I suggest, you know, I'm going to come and I'm going to go to visit you, and it's kind of a drive from my parents, so I want to plan something. I cannot just show up, take like 6 hours drive. And every time she had an excuse, and when I say excuse, it was correct. I mean, she had like big issues with the aging parents, big health issues. There was always something, but I found that this year, everything was more like settled. But she still refused. She said she wasn't ready. She was not in the mood. She's still too stressed. There are so many things happening with her mom and everything. So I kind of took it bad and I said, look, man, it will never happen because every time there is something that makes you, you know, not wanting to see me. And I don't understand because in writing, it's fine. I mean, we connect, you know, through Facebook and we do FaceTime sometimes, but it's very different. And I feel like it. You don't want me to come to your place to see you for real, right? So she explained to me that she feel like so overwhelmed, and still, you know, she hasn't breathed completely for my brother. So I'd like to help her with this too. I mean, like, bring something else. But she refused. So I pushed it a little bit, and we left it as, yeah, okay, well, you know, we'll see next time. But I was upset. I was like disappointed and kind of say, you know, I mean, she's like throwing herself into this hole, and I just want to try to help her climb out. So I realized it was, you know, after a couple of hours, of course, I realized that it was my craving attachments who wanted me to do that and not hers. And actually, I'm glad that she explained to me, especially with our texting. So I have it in writing, and I read it a couple of times after that. So it was very clear that she didn't say, no, I don't want to see you, but it wasn't her time. So now I feel not bad, because I'm working on that too. So I said, okay, she was right. I appreciated that she held her ground, and she, you know, it's not good for her. That's good. And I have to accept it. So now I'm wondering whether I should write her like a real note saying, I understand, and I'm not mad at you. I never told her I was mad at her. I was like, yeah, okay. But this time I insisted more than I used to. And I don't want her to take it the wrong way. And so, is it a good idea to kind of go back to the story like a week later and say, oh, by the way, I thought about this, and I understand what you mean, and I'm fine with it, or should I just let it go?
You should actually do both of those things, because because
I think I let it go already. I think I let it go. I'm not mad at it. After I understood it was my thing,
yeah,
because I promised it to my brother. And, you know, and she's not doing it, but she has also her own reasons. I understand that. I mean, you know, it's life. So, but I was just wondering if, like, poking back was a good idea.
Yeah. So what's transpired is you have a craving in your mind, which you identify, which is great. I know you've been studying with me for a while, so you're starting to be able to identify those cravings, desires, attachments, those longing, yearning. You're wanting your sister, right?
Sister-in-law.
Wanting your sister-in-law to do a certain thing, or, you know, do something based on what you want. So when sister-in-law says, no, you know, it's not the right time, you know, she's probably grieving, and seeing you is probably make her grieving come up, and she's not willing to confront that. So she's probably pushing the situation away, thinking that that's going to solve her problem, but it's not. And you're having a craving to see her because you're wanting to help her and help her get out of this grief and misery. So when your craving is arising, you're going to be making unwise decisions about your moral conduct and the way that you conduct yourself. And that's where your speech, your intentions, your speech, and your actions became unskillful and unwise. And now you've produced what we refer to as unwholesome karma, or unwholesome results, based on your decisions being based in craving. I know you weren't necessarily angry, but the frustration, the agitation, and then that's that ignorance or unknowing of true reality that you learned about with the three poisons or the three unwholesome roots. Whenever you're making decisions through those three unwholesome roots, it's going to produce unwholesome results for you. So where you've produced that unwholesome result, you would like to clean it up. And this is part of extinguishing your karma, extinguishing your old unwholesome karma. So you can extinguish it, one, by, yes, identifying your craving, because that's getting right to the source of it. And you'd like to eliminate that from the mind. And anything that you've done unskillful, you would like to apologize. And in your apology, I don't suggest that you promise things will never happen again, because you don't know whether that's the case or not, because right now you don't have full control over your mind. But you can definitely apologize, which will help clean up your karma and let them know that you realize that what you did was unwise, and that you're working on this, and that you apologize. So that would be the way to clean it up. And then what you're doing is you're training the mind to let go of sister-in-law. Realize that she is her own being. She's making her own decisions. Just because she's choosing to not get together with you doesn't mean she don't love you, doesn't mean she doesn't want to spend time with you or interested to spend time with you.
She told me she loves me. It's just not the right moment. She said, I'm sure someday I'll be, she wants to feel free and, and happy. And now she's still, like, you know, taking care of her older mother, who was like dementia, and you know, I mean, things are better because now the mother is like in a nursing home and she's taken care of, so she doesn't have to do anything except visiting her. But she is still like, it's still like a lot of stress for her. I mean, like, you know, what's happening with the mom and everything. So I understand that my, well, no, I understand now, you know, why she wants to wait until the moment will be perfect. And I know that this moment will never happen. I told her, you know, I understand the thing, what you do. I mean, you know, we've been raised like this. We feel guilty. It's either the guilt or the sacrifice. And we have to, need to juggle between the two. You do it or you don't, but there's always something negative that's bound to it. And she told me, so for now, she's working on being positive. And so she said, every time I have like a negative thought or something, I just, you know, put it in a room and close the door and lock it. So, you know, and then I can be safe. And I said, yeah, but someday this thought, it's not like, you know, they won't go away if you pile them up in a corner. Like I use the under the rug sometimes, but you know, so anyway, but I realized then, you know, that she's not in the same way of thinking that I am, and I cannot just impose it on her. So I feel my brother is at peace, but she feels that he's not. So, you know, it's very, yeah, it's complicated. But I just want to make sure, I know she loves me. She said so. I mean, she didn't say, there was no aggressivity in both ways. I was just insisted. And then at some point, it's like, okay, I'm not insisted anymore. But, you know, I had just to process the fact that, you know, I wouldn't see her again. And that was it. So I just want to bring it back and apologize. I already apologized, but you know, it was just at the end of the conversation. So it was kind of, it was a true apology in my thing, but it could be like, say, okay, we've talked enough, you know, have a good day. But I'd like to do a little more. That's why I wanted to know whether it was, you know, wise or not, actually, because I don't want to make it worse.
Yeah. Yeah, that insisting that you're doing with her, that's your craving, desire, attachment manifesting in unskillful conduct. And then, I don't know if you realized that you cut me off when I was talking. Did you realize that?
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Earlier, you cut me off. That's also the craving, too. That's why people interrupt you, because they're impatient, they have a craving, they want to hurry up and say something. So when somebody's craving is arising, there's this emotion and the person wants to jump in and talk right away. So you can see that in the description of the situation, but also even just talking here, you can see that there's still some craving there that you need to let go of.
Yes, it's back actually. Yeah. I mean it again. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, I'll do that. My other question is that because well, it doesn't hurt to stop the whole cycle again, you know, with the volume one of the book that I finished the cycle, but I'm redoing this. I just started again because I think it won't hurt. So when you're done with the, I mean, is it good for me to, is it good to do the whole volume one again with you, or should I jump into like the study group on Saturdays when you start a new one?
Each person needs to decide for themselves. Doing the group learning program more than once is very wise. There's plenty of people who do that. Then sometimes people will even do both, like the Polycanon and English study group in the group learning program at the same time. Particularly after you've already done the group learning program once, you might decide to do this one again and the Polycanon and English study group. But with that Polycanon and English study group, you don't need to start at the very beginning because that one only restarts once every 1.5 years. So you can actually start that one at any point, because by the time you get into the Polycanon and English study group, you've already laid a really good foundation down. So you can actually come in at any point.
Oh, okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll do that then. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. All right. Looks like Julia has a question here in Zoom. If you'd like to go ahead, you can open up your mic.
Hi. Thank you so much, Teacher David. I feel like I feel for Miriam a lot because I'm the reversed situation where I'm the sister-in-law. I just had a baby about 5 months ago, and my in-laws and husband, I'm an introvert, and they want to always visit and they want to help out. And I know it comes with good intentions, but I have a craving to rest and be alone, and that is often not respected. And so I have a craving for that. And so I'm trying to figure out how to let go of that craving by, you know, I feel that I need to rest mentally and physically. That's what's good for me. That's how my body feels. And so I've respectfully requested time, but sometimes they don't respect it. So I have a craving to avoid them. So I'm trying to figure out how to let go of that craving, because I feel like it's becoming an aversion where now when they call, I'm automatically don't want to pick up or deal with it.
Okay. So the breathing mindfulness meditation and what you're going to learn as part of generosity, which is giving and sharing more than is strictly required in any given situation without any expectation of anything in return. This is like sharing your time, effort, energy, and resources. This is what's going to help you train your mind to let go. This is the generalized training that you're going to learn about as you go forward in the group learning program. So there's the breathing mindfulness meditation that's helping you eliminate all cravings, desires, attachments, and generosity. It's kind of softening up the mind and get it comfortable with letting go, right? And as you get that up and running and ongoing for a few months, then you're going to learn in chapter 13 about how to identify your craving, which it sounds like you have already. And then you're going to learn about how to put your mind in the situation that it doesn't want to be in. And then that's how you train it to almost surgically let go of a craving. So in this situation where you're craving to be alone and you don't want to be with the family on certain occasions, you would like to put your mind in that situation and train it to be comfortable there, because it's not comfortable there. But based on what you're sharing with me, I don't recommend that you do that until you get your breathing mindfulness meditation up and running on a consistent ongoing basis. You get some generosity built up. And also your in-laws and your other people who are putting their expectations on you and not respecting your decisions until they start learning to respect your decisions. Because you need to be able to practice to a point where people aren't grabbing and pulling at you, and people aren't just kind of barging in and doing, you know, whatever they think should be done. So if you're politely saying like, hey, I appreciate you guys being interested to come over, and I'm sure you're very excited to see your grandson. I would like to stay home, and this is what I need in order to rest and relax. Maybe we can get together another time. And if they're insisting and pushing and pushing and pushing, that's their craving. They don't understand that because they're not learning and practicing these teachings. But it's not going to be wise for you to satisfy their cravings, because then they're just going to be craving more and more and more. And probably what it is, I don't know, but they probably are very excited to see their grandson, right? They have that craving, the desire. So like maybe if your partner would like to take the grandson to go see them, that can actually satisfy some of their cravings, but at least you get your alone time, because there's certain needs that we have. But then the challenge is that there's certain wants, right? So what you might be talking about here is you're saying your mind wants to be alone, perhaps, but you're also using this word need, because you do need some rest. You do need some alone time. And more as you develop your meditation practice and you develop your mindfulness, you'll be able to see the difference between a need and a want. Because when there's a want, when there's a longing and a yearning, you'll be able to observe that with your mindfulness. The mind almost feels like it's pulling towards something. And you will be discontent in a situation where you don't get your wants fulfilled. Or you get your wants fulfilled and you'll get excited. So if you get your wants fulfilled, you'll get excited, those conditioned pleasant feelings. If you don't get your wants fulfilled, you'll get angry or sad or frustrated. That's how you'll know it's a want, because you'll be able to start seeing it with the mind and you'll be able to see the result. If it's truly a need, then you can be content whether you experience that particular thing or not. Your mind can maintain its contentedness, whether you get that thing or not. So that's how you'll be able to learn more and more about what a craving, desire, attachment is, and whether this particular thing is truly a craving, desire, attachment. But in a situation where you've got people tugging and pulling at you, the last thing you're interested in doing is giving into that, because they're just going to keep doing that. And you can't change them. You can't teach them. All you can do is make wise decisions for yourself and doing things like not answering the phone call can be really wise. Maybe even, you know, when they call and they do talk to you and they say, hey, we really like to come over, you can say, hey, I understand you'd like to come over this Friday, but how about next Friday, right? You can kind of postpone it a week or so. So that way you can prepare, and then that way their mind can choose to let go a little bit. So you're going to need to kind of skillfully do this kind of thing until their mind lets go, and understanding that an attachment to a grandson is very strong. And if they're not training their mind, it's going to be very hard for them to let it go because they don't understand it. But there's ways for you to skillfully practice to help them to let it go if that's what their mind chooses to do. So you can do these kinds of things if you like. Okay, I see some more questions here coming in. I think it's Bettina. I am seeing colors during meditation, purple and golden pattern. Also, bushes with big green leaves and mountains, like optical illusions. How can I deal with it? Okay, what you're experiencing is actually not a problem at all. This is actually an indication that things are going really well in your meditation. I talked about this a little bit last week. You might not have been in class when I was talking about it, or you might just not have remembered that I talked about this visual stimulation that the mind can experience. That when you're training the mind and you're purifying the mind, it has an effect on the brain. The brain and the mind are two different things. And the physical structures of the brain are actually changing as you're purifying the mind. Even though these are two different things, there's a connection between the two of them. So the physical structures of the brain can be changing, and that's where you can see these flashes of purple and things like this, because even with your eyes closed, sight is happening inside the brain. The eye itself is just a lens to bring in the light, but the sight is actually occurring inside the brain. So you might notice these different things. What you can also notice sometimes in meditation, but even outside of meditation, is you can have residual memories of past lives as well. That could potentially be what you're experiencing here, is that there was a certain experience that you had in a previous life, and now as you're meditating, this is kind of removing the pollution out of the mind, and it's kind of unlocking this. So it's not a problem at all. The only reason why you might be perceiving it as a problem is that there could be a craving for it to not occur. And just understand that this will occur. It's normal. You haven't done anything wrong. It's actually an indication that things are headed in a positive direction. If you're not experiencing these things, it doesn't mean that you're doing anything wrong, but just the fact that these things are occurring, it actually shows that things are shifting and moving and changing inside the mind and inside the brain, and this is actually really helpful. So you might go through a period of time like this. It could be 3 months, 6 months, a year, where you have these different things occurring like this, but then eventually you'll kind of get over the hump and you'll see that those things will dissipate, that they won't be there. But if you have a craving for them to dissipate or not to be there, then you'll be frustrated or agitated, or you might perceive it as a problem. Just understand it's normal. It's going to happen for a while. It's not permanent. And as it happens, just keep cutting that off and bringing your mind back to the breath. Bring your mind back to the breath. Bring your mind back to the breath whenever those things are occurring. Okay, so good question there. All of your guys' questions are really great. Looks like Julia has another question here too. Does it help to meditate in the same place or time every day, or does it not matter? Is it okay to use the sensation of the body rising or falling instead of breathing through the nose?
So it's not possible to meditate in exactly the same place and exactly the same time every single time. If you were able to do this, even for a period of time, it's unwise to do that because the mind will get attached to meditating in this exact same place and the exact same time. And then when you try to do it somewhere else, or you try to do it at a different time, the mind won't like it because it doesn't like that impermanence. The mind craves permanence. So what I usually suggest to students is, you know, the first 4 to 6 weeks, usually students are building up their meditation practice at home, kind of like in their bedroom or their living room, or they might have a meditation room set up in their house. If you need to do that kind of just to get your practice established, that can be helpful and that can be wise to just kind of like meditate in the same place, not necessarily the same time, but you're not interested in doing it for anything more than about maybe 4, 6, 8 weeks. And then after that, you would like to start kind of moving the mind around into different locations and introduce some impermanence into it so that it doesn't get fixated and meditating in the same place. So if you have like a meditation room or a bedroom that you're meditating in, switch it up and meditate in the dining room or the living room sometimes, or go outside on the patio, or go to a park and kind of switch around different times and introduce some impermanence. It'll kind of shift the mind, and the mind won't kind of like it at first, but this is exactly why you're doing it, because the mind doesn't like impermanence. It craves permanence. So when I talked about that on Sunday, where the mind's craving permanence, and when it doesn't get what it wants, meaning it experiences impermanence, it gets uncomfortable. So what you're looking to do is, once you get established with something like a meditation practice, is introduce some impermanence, like different lighting, different sounds, different locations. So if you normally meditate at home and it's quite quiet, by moving to a park, for example, there's going to be birds chirping, there's going to be kids playing maybe, there's going to be people riding bikes. This is all impermanence that the mind has to deal with, and now it has to overcome any kind of cravings for a certain environment for meditation. And as you move your mind around like this, different times, different locations, it becomes more and more stable and more steady, because you're training it to understand impermanence and not have cravings. The focus, the concentration, the clarity, and the deep memory that we talk about with the enlightened mind, that's not actually coming from the meditation itself. The meditation is actually preparing the mind to let go of its cravings, desires, attachments. But it's when the mind eliminates its craving, desire, attachments, that focus, concentration, clarity, and deep memory start coming into the mind, because you're eliminating the pollution that's in the mind. So the meditation is a tool or technique that prepares the mind to then notice that there's cravings with the mindfulness, and develop the concentration, and then to be able to easily let go. So over time, you're going to be interested in putting the mind in the situation where it finds to be uncomfortable. Like meditation is a good example of that. But then also what we were just talking about with your in-laws, you would like to actually do that from time to time to train the mind that, hey, it's okay. And while you're with your in-laws, if you need to get up and go find a quiet room for 20 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour, whatever it is, then go do that. Or if you need to go for a walk, go do that. It would be unwise to be unskillful in your relationships. So if you can just get to the point where maybe they come over every once in a while, and you can maintain that for like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, but you need to go take a break, go do that. Go take a break, go do some quiet time, and then come back. So you're putting your mind in the situation that it's not interested in being in. And then this other question you had about, is it okay to use the sensation of the belly rising or falling instead of breathing through the nose? I would ask you, you know, why is it that breathing through the nose is problematic? Because obviously everybody can't breathe through the nose. Some people are going to need to breathe through the mouth. Some people are going to need to breathe through the nose. There can be other things that need to happen like that. But where possible, it would be wise if you were able to breathe through the nose. You'll notice that your meditation is more beneficial. But you can also train to breathe other ways too, because you're going to have sinus infections sometimes, maybe, or a cold or a flu or something like this. Some people don't even have a nose, right? They were born without one, or they have a tracheotomy or something like that, and they're breathing through their windpipe or something like that. So you can use some of these other things like that. And if you can develop your practice where you can get just as peaceful and observe the breath through these other things, you could use those. Where possible, I would suggest using the nose, because that's what I notice produces the most benefit. Even though I've trained the mind to meditate by breathing in through the mouth, I notice there's so much more benefit through the nose. So I would encourage you to look at that, and I'm not sure why you're not able to do that. Maybe you would like to share. And then if you've looked at that and it's just not possible for you to breathe through the nose for whatever reason, maybe there's an obstruction or something like that, then there's these other options that you can use as well. And perhaps if you do those regularly, you can train your mind to be just as peaceful and just as well trained using those other things as breathing through the nose. Because what you're looking to focus on is the breath, because the breath is the present moment. So the rising and falling of the chest or the stomach, the abdomen, is indication of the present moment of the breath. But you'll notice, like I mentioned, the actual breath itself has more of an anchoring point, where when the Buddha describes meditation, he describes focusing on the breath. And he talks about it like this post and this pillar. If you have a post and a pillar, and you have six animals tied to this post and pillar, and maybe the alligator's going to the river, the bird is flying to the sky, the monkey's going to the jungle, and all these six animals are pulling and tugging, they're going to get yanked back to that post. They're just going to keep getting yanked back and yanked back and yanked back. And eventually they're going to sit down. by that post and that pillar. They're not going to pull anymore. And that's what you're doing with your breath, is that's the post and pillar. And your mind's going to keep pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling. And you're yanking it back and yanking it back and yanking it back. And more and more and more, your mind's going to get used to just sitting down and being still at that post and that pillar. And that's where the stillness and the quietness comes into the mind. Okay, we have some other questions coming in here. Oh, this is from Julia, actually. Thank you so much, Teacher David. My husband views me refusing to see his family every week as a rejection of his family. I guess he has craving to pacify his family. That is a great source of conflict in our marriage, where he doesn't respect my need to be alone or rest. I guess that is his craving and not my responsibility, like you suggested. Just skillfully say, maybe we can do it another time when I am fully well, etc. I think I also have a craving to be prioritized more than his family. Thank you again.
Yes, you're 100% accurate on that, that your husband is having a perception. This is what we call a perception. A perception is a view or opinion about how things seem to be. And oftentimes these perceptions are untrue. Essentially, we might think about a perception like an assumption. So your husband's making an assumption based in his own craving. And when you have a craving that arises, you're not going to be able to see things in the world very clearly. So based on his craving arising, all that pollution is arising. It's like looking out at the world through a dirty window. And when you look out at the world through a dirty window, you see nothing but dirt, right? And now your husband is thinking that you're rejecting his family. And that's based on his perceptions, and that's based on his cravings. But you know that that's not true. You know, you just gave birth to a baby 5 months ago. And sometimes a man might think like, oh, you know, you gave birth, like, come on, let's get back to it. But I was around my wife, you know, it took her many years actually to get her body and her mind back to where it needed to be. You can't go through all those physical changes in the body and in the mind delivering a baby and just snap right back into it. You're going to need time to gradually rest, and your husband may not be understanding this, and he may need to understand, and you're probably going to need to have some conversations with him at times when it's quiet, when it's calm, when the topic of his parents coming around hasn't even been brought up. But you can just go to him and say, you know, honey, you know, maybe bring him some fruit, bring him some dessert, hold his hand, look him in the eye, let him know sincerely that you do find it something that you need to do is spend time with his family, but you just need some time for yourself. And you would just like him to understand that you're not rejecting his family, that you just need some time for yourself. And if he can be understanding of that, that would be wonderful, right? Because he's having that expectation and that craving, and you don't need to fulfill that, because you're going to have different people tugging and pulling at you, because this new baby came into the world and everybody wants to see it, right? Everybody wants to be around it, particularly as that baby starts getting a little bit older and more interactive and stuff like that. So you're going to need to be able to manage these relationships, but you're managing your own mind, right? You can't change your husband. You can't change your in-laws. All you can do is make your own decisions. And sometimes you're going to need to have a sincere conversation with a family member here or there and just help them understand how you really feel, because they're not seeing true reality. They're seeing the world through their perceptions and through their cravings. And you may not be in a position to be able to explain that to them the way that I would, but you can surely go to them and explain true reality of what's truly in your mind. And you can even ask them questions. You can say, you know, honey, why is it that you feel like I'm rejecting your family? Do you think that I should be able to see them every single Friday? And they're like, yes, they should be able to come every single Friday. And that's where you say, okay, so you want me to permanently see them every single Friday? And they're like, yeah. And you say, well, let's look around the world. Is there anything that you see that's permanent? Is there anything in the world that you can see that is permanent, right? Because this is his mind craving that permanence. So you might be able to kind of gradually help him to see some more wisdom like that. And then at the very least, you share your true intentions and your thoughts. And he may not fully understand it after one conversation, but at least you share that with him. And he has the opportunity to understand the wisdom. And you'd like to do this at a time when everything's quite calm and there isn't anything else going on, because when it's time for mom and dad to come over and emotions are high and cravings are high, that's not the right time to explain something, because you can't get the wisdom, you can't get the understanding into your mind or into your husband's mind. So you'd like to do it when that conversation is long gone, the anger isn't there, the frustration isn't there, You'll learn about this Sunday when I talk about the moral conduct. You'll learn about the wise time to speak and interact with other people. So you're headed in the right direction there, but I imagine you still kind of feel guilty and shameful because of your own cravings and your own attachments. But don't allow these other people to put their expectations on you. They will surely try, right? But you don't need to adopt them as your own. So if your husband's putting expectations on you, your in-laws are putting expectations on you, just see it for what it is. That's their expectations. You're interested in eliminating your own cravings, desires, attachments. The last thing you're interested in doing is adopting other people's cravings, desires, attachments into your own mind. So you can just see it for what it is and then just help those people to understand true reality of how you truly feel. Because obviously they're not understanding you, and you can provide them that opportunity to understand you if they would like to do that. And you might even ask them, you know, is this the right time to talk? And, you know, is this a good time? I would like to share something with you because I'm interested in having you better understand the way I feel on this particular topic. And then if he's like, yeah, let's talk, then it's a good time to talk. But if he says no, then you'll just need to find another time that's more suitable for you guys. So yeah, great questions there. Oh, you're welcome, Bettina. Very pleased to help you. Okay, looks like Fiona has a question. Go ahead, ma'am.
Oh, hello, Teacher David and everybody. I've got problem with anxiety. For example, recently I had an appointment and the other person was running late, and in the time that I was waiting after the time that we were meant to meet, I suddenly felt anxiety, and also bodily sensations, and I wanted to cut it off but I couldn't. And one of the things you said earlier was regarding redirecting the mind. Would that help in that situation? And when I feel anxiety, I don't feel it. It suddenly feel like I've got it, and the bodily sensations are very uncomfortable as well. And it does arise and fade, so I know it's not going to last forever. But it's just not very nice at the time. What would you advise?
Yes, this is actually excellent, Fiona, that you have enough mindfulness to see this. We're going to be talking about this in two Sundays from now when we talk about the mental discipline section, that before the mind experiences any discontent feeling, and now here we're talking about anxiety, there's something that's happening before that, and it's the bodily sensations associated with the discontentedness that's arising. So when you have a craving in your mind and you experience certain contact through the six sense bases, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, the body, and the mind itself, when you experience this contact, if you have a craving in your mind, there's going to be bodily sensations first, then there's going to be the feeling that comes into the mind. Then it's going to affect the condition of your mind for a few minutes, a few hours, a few days. If you've ever been angry or agitated for a week or two, this is the reason why. And then it forms a conditioned object, like a mental object, a deeply rooted container in the mind. This is what we're going to talk about in about a week and a half from now. So what you would like to do is to be able to cut it off and let it go as soon in this process as possible. These are called the four foundations of mindfulness. If you can cut it off as a bodily sensation, wonderful. But this early in practice, you're probably not going to be able to, right? As you just said. But at least that you're noticing it as a bodily sensation, that's really positive. That's really wonderful that you can do that. If you can cut it off as a feeling, because if you miss it as a bodily sensation, it's going to become a feeling. If you can cut it off there, again, wonderful, great. But ultimately, you would like to back it all the way up. But that's going to take you many months and maybe even years to be able to do that in every single situation. And then if you miss it as a feeling, it's going to start affecting the condition of your mind. This is where, you know, for several hours or days or a week or two, if you've been agitated, that's where it's affecting the condition of your mind. And you'd like to catch that sooner and sooner and cut that off, because otherwise it's going to feed this mental object. So if you're not able at this point in time to cut it off internally, that's normal. But yes, you can redirect the mind. You can try to redirect it. But just understand that your mind hasn't had enough practice yet to be able to let these things go readily and easily. It's going to take many months to build up the quality of mind to be able to let them go. The deeper held attachments, the deeper cravings, those will be harder to let go of. They'll be stronger emotions, and they'll be harder to let go of. The simple ones, like maybe you really want to get a chocolate bar and you go into the 7-Eleven and it's not there and you get agitated. You know, you can let that go within a few seconds or a minute or two, right? Because it's just a chocolate bar. But if your mom ended up in the hospital with a tragic accident, that's going to shake your mind up for a lot longer. So there's a whole spectrum to these cravings where you have these really lighter ones that kind of fluff off really easily, and then you have these deeper held ones. It's kind of like an onion. If you have this onion, the outer layers peel off really easily, but then as you get deeper and deeper into the onion, it gets harder and harder to peel it back. So you'll notice this. And yes, you can redirect the mind. We used to even do this with our child, since it sounds like Julia has a young child and some of the rest of you guys are around children. You can even do this with children, because children don't have the wisdom to do what it is that I'm describing right here, but this is what you would like to do. But even with a child, if you see them getting ready to get discontent, you can redirect their mind and teach them to cut it off and let it go. We used to do this with my son. We would say, "Is that a squirrel outside? Did you hear that? What was that noise?" Or, "Oh my goodness, did you see that beautiful cloud? Look at that cloud." And we would do this even when he was 6 months old, 9 months old, a year old. And as he got to the point where I started formally helping him in these teachings at the age of 6, it was so easy to help him and so easy to train him. And even now at the age of 11, he very rarely gets discontent anymore, because he's trained his mind to let go of a lot of his cravings, desires, attachments. If any of us would have trained our mind that early, it would have been wonderful. We wouldn't have had to experience all that misery and heartache and pain that we experienced. So you can do this for yourself. You can even do this with children. You can even do it with adults, right? Like sometimes if you're in a conversation and you see somebody's mind getting ready to get angry or upset, you can actually completely change the subject to something completely different, helping them to cut off and let go of what it is that they're about to get angry and frustrated about. Because you can start reading people's body language and facial expressions, the tone of their voice and things like this. So that should help you, Fiona. But of course, if you have any follow-up questions on that, you're welcome to ask. Okay, it looks like you put your hand down, so must not have any follow-up questions there. Okay, I'm not seeing any other questions anywhere. So I see somebody here in YouTube has some writing. It looks like Ronald Tan. There's some Chinese writing there. I apologize. I can't read Chinese and YouTube doesn't translate it for me. If you would like to ask a question in the future, maybe you could just put it in English, or maybe go to Google and translate it to English and put it in there. I'd be able to help you. Okay, so what I'll do then is just wrap up class by reminding you guys that next week on Wednesday will be the third part of our four-part series, where we'll essentially do the same thing, where we'll do a little bit of meditation together. I'll probably teach a certain aspect of meditation and really honing in on that. And then I will open up to any and all questions that you have. Wednesdays is a great day to ask any and all questions. And if you think of a question during the week, you can put that into the Facebook group. You can send it to me in a private message. You can schedule personal guidance through our website to be able to meet with me in Zoom one-on-one. And then of course, you can always ask questions during classes as well. And then this Sunday, we're gonna be in part two of our three-part series, where I'm diving into the Eightfold Path and helping you guys understand the moral conduct section this Sunday. That in three separate classes, I'm going to go into detail about each individual section of the Eightfold Path, because this is the path to enlightenment. If you're interested in getting rid of these discontent feelings and training your mind to get to the peace, the calm, the serenity, the contentedness and joy, you would need to know the Eightfold Path inside and out, backwards and forwards, left, right, up, down. And what you would like to be doing is gradually building up where you're coming to classes or listening to the recordings regularly, that you're doing a bit of meditation, you know, building up to two or three sessions for 30 minutes or more, and you're doing a little bit of reading from volume one, like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes a day, just those three things, and slowly but surely integrating the teachings into your daily life. And this is where you'll gradually see the improvements. And you're gonna have situations where you know what you should be doing, which like Fiona was talking about, like cutting it off and letting it go, but the mind just won't do it. And that's because the mind's just not trained enough. It's not disciplined and you don't have enough control. So sometimes you can just laugh at yourself. Sometimes I used to take myself so seriously. You would get angry because you're angry, right? So you can just laugh at yourself sometimes and just keep it very light. Okay, so perhaps I'll see you guys in one of these future classes, either Sunday or Wednesday. And just so you know, also on Saturday, I'm going to be teaching a 3-hour introduction to the teachings of the Buddha. And that's going to be live stream, and there's going to be Zoom for that. And then there's also going to be a course coming up this week, Monday through Friday, which is the Foundation and the Path to Enlightenment. And this is a 5-day course where I'm deeply getting into the teachings of the Buddha over a 5-day period. Essentially, that 5 days is the first 2 months of the group learning program. So if you're attending the group learning program, maybe that's enough for you right now. But if you'd like to learn some extra things and really kind of get into the heart of it, you'll see every single month, the first week of the month, I'm going to be teaching this Foundation and the Path to Enlightenment course. And there's other courses and retreats too that you're going to see from time to time. And you can attend those the same way, either YouTube, Facebook, or you can come into Zoom. And they're also recorded, because depending on your time zone, you might not be able to attend live through the entire course, but you can potentially watch the recording. So all of these things are available to you. So again, thank you all for your dedication and diligence to learning and practicing the teachings of the Buddha. Perhaps we'll see you guys in one of these future classes. Have a very lovely and wonderful rest of your day. Sawadee khrap.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To provide support for this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha. To access more teachings, visit buddhadailywisdom.com. There, you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Remember to establish a daily, consistent meditation practice, along with learning and practicing these teachings. A well-developed meditation practice is the foundation in which to train the mind to attain enlightenment.